Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to kick our program off today talking antiques, appraisals, and auctions with two guests. Shirley Bauman, been with us a number of times. She's an auctioneer, certified appraiser, works out of Madison, BaumanAuctions.com and HeirloomAppraisal.com, a couple of her websites. Carol Miller joining us for the first time. She's from Oconomowoc and an auctioneer and appraiser, works out of Bailey's Honor Auction Service. And she was just named Wisconsin's champion auctioneer at the state fair. So we're great to have both of them with us today. And certainly, if you have a question or comment as we move along today, as we talk antiques and appraisals and auctions, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. We'd love to hear from you. Shirley, great to have you back.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here, Larry.
And Carol Miller, welcome for the first time.
Thank you so much. A pleasure indeed.
So you're named Wisconsin's champion auctioneer.
Yeah, I had a great honor. The Wisconsin Auctioneers Association gave me the honor of the state champion for 2010, and I happen to be the first woman to win that contest since its inception in Wisconsin. So
wonderful. So what did you how did you win that? What was it based on? Auctioneering or past experiences or what?
Well, there's two parts. There's an interview portion where we have a panel of five judges, and they ask you three interview questions. Mm-hmm. And then there is a preliminary bid calling, mm-hmm. where each contestant, there was 18 contestants, mm-hmm. and men and women, and each person sold two items. And then from the scores of that, they pick six finalists, and then your interview is added into those scores and into the finals, and then they choose the winner based on that. And it's a lot of things, from bid calling and stage presence and how you interact with the buyers and all of those things that they score on.
So now, what primarily, when you work with antiques and appraisals, what primarily are you working with antiques? Or are you working with auctions of it?
Well, we've had an auction, Bailey's Honor, and it's baileyshonor.com. We've mm-hmm. been doing antique collectible auctions, real estate auctions for 17 years. Mm-hmm. We hold a monthly antique and collectible auction. It's usually every third Wednesday of the mm-hmm. month in Dousman, so kind of in between the Milwaukee-Madison area here. Mm-hmm. And we've been doing those, like I said, for about 17 years. So we do a lot of collections, a lot of downsizing, a lot of partial estates, but primarily our main focus is antiques and collectibles.
Yeah, and surely that's kind of the same for you, isn't it?
It is. That's what we do the most of. But not exclusively. For example, next Tuesday, the 31st of August, we have a restaurant auction coming up here in Madison on Monroe Street. And so we'll go where the need is.
So that's next, when is
next
it?
Tuesday, next Tuesday, the 31st of August.
Okay. And you said you have one coming up as well, Carol?
I do. Next Thursday on August 26th at 3 p.m., we have moved an estate from Merton, and we're having that auction in the UCC Church right mm-hmm. on Main Street in Merton. And then I have an antique and collectible auction in Dousman September 15th and September 29th. Those are in the evenings.
Do more, Shirley, do people have unrealistic expectations about the value of their property often, or sometimes are they surprised?
Well, it's a little of both. At this point in time, you have to watch the market. And right now, furniture in general is just not selling at auction. And there's a lot of people who come with some beautiful, especially Victorian furniture, and we just can't sell it. It's just getting very low bids right now. On the other hand, some other things are going really high. In June, we sold a Rookwood vase by the designer Shira Yamadani. I have that name right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that one went for over $4,000.
Yeah.
So it depends on if you have something hard to find, maybe rare or scarce and special, then people are surprised by the
Yeah, prices. Carol, same with you?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it has a lot to do with the different things people are collecting now. Yeah. But I think furniture really has been difficult. Like Shirley had indicated about the Victorian time period, with the turnover, I think a lot of people who had Victorian are in the downsizing time of their lives, and there's not a lot of people to pick up on that now.
Yeah, and there's probably a lot of it out there.
Yes. There's a lot of it out there. And we're seeing more people going into the arts and crafts and even mid-century modern in their furniture, because those are the younger people coming up and furnishing their places.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Needing furniture.
What are some of the sort of general areas that seem to be doing well? Are there some that are, relatively speaking, doing well?
I think art pottery in general is doing very well, and especially American art pottery. Mm-hmm. Toys continue to do well, and model trains especially.
I think a lot of character type collectibles, like from the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I have found in my business that a lot of things, prices driven by what people hold in their heart, you know, what they remember, what they have a connection with. So a lot of people, the newer collectors, you know, they are interested in the toys and things that they had growing up that they maybe don't have anymore, and they want to get again. Paper and advertising is holding really strong. A lot of that ephemera and like petroleum advertising, but just advertising in general.
Holding
is,
up.
Yep. Yep.
Well, we have lots of callers online to visit with you, so let's go to the phones. Monica in Fond du Lac, we'll turn to you first. Hi, Monica.
Hi, Larry and guests. I have a doll. She's 15 inches tall. She has her original shoe. She has brown eyes and hair. She has the four front teeth, and it's an open mouth. She's got a leather body. She has a very pretty face, no flaws in it. And on the back of her neck, it says SNH 1260. And then below that, it says DEP and number 5. And she has a white dress. And I'd like to know how old she is and what is her value. Thank you.
Do you know, have a rough idea as to her age?
No, that's what I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's see what. It's not a lot to go on. Carol, we'll start with you.
The S&H stands for Simon and Helbig. That would be the producer of that doll. The DEP, a lot of times those molds were shared between different companies. And the open mouth and the teeth, that's fairly common. I would say dating it-wise, it's probably prior to 1920, probably somewhere about 1910 to 1918, around in that general area. 15-inch is a fairly common size. The bigger they are, the higher the dollar value. Mm. Unfortunately, dolls are another area of collectibles that have been a little bit, the prices have gone down. If you look in like the Blue Book of dolls, you can see a significant decrease for a lot of these bisque dolls, where the collecting is a little higher in the 40s and the 50s time period. You're probably, I'm going to just say as a rough guess, and Shirley, I'll ask your opinion as well, I would say probably somewhere in the $85 to $135 range, maybe a little more. Kind of hard to say without seeing her.
Right.
Yeah, without seeing her. Condition is so, so important with dolls. The head needs to be in perfect condition to really get that kind of a price. You can have some damage elsewhere, but it's really that most of the value of a doll is in its head.
Oh, mm-hmm. Interesting. Thanks, Monica. Dick in Cross Plains, we're on to you. Hi, Dick.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
My question is in regard to appraisal procedures for antique jewelry. About 20 years ago, we took a bunch of stuff from safe deposit boxes to a fairly well-known jeweler here in Madison to get some sense of what it's worth. We have absolutely no idea. The items had probably last been worn in the 1940s and 50s, and they probably dated from the late 1800s by and large. And the jeweler wanted us to leave these items, rings and earrings and things like that, with them, and said they might even have to send them to Chicago for analysis. And given the possibility of our not really being familiar with the contents of the box and not knowing what we're doing, we are concerned about, you know, substitution of cheap stones for something that was worthwhile, and you know, stealing platinum or gold from us, that kind of stuff. And I'm wondering, should we be letting the stuff out of our sight, much less out of town?
Okay, Shirley, what do you think?
Well, that's always a question, and it's you're always uncomfortable when you let those things out of your possession. But if you indicate that you had a number of pieces, an appraisal can't be done real quickly when there's a lot to do. If you have just a piece or two, you may be able to sit and wait while the jeweler does their inspection and does the looking. I work with I'm not a jewelry appraiser, by the way, and that's because I'm not a gemologist. Mm. But I work with a jewelry appraiser here in Madison a lot, and she's been in this business for many, many years, and she will do her inspection of one or two pieces while people are there sitting in her office, and then and take good photographs and measurements and all the things we need to do when we look at those kinds of things. So my feeling is if you don't want to let them out, just do one or two pieces at a time if you can. Ask if they will make an appointment and ask if they will look at it while you wait. And that might give you a better sense of comfort. Or maybe keep looking for another appraiser that you feel more comfortable with.
We have so much material, it would require many trips, but I hear what you're saying, and thank you very much.
Sure. Yeah,
thank you very much for calling. Back to dolls for just a minute. We had an email from Don, who inherited an antique doll collection from a great aunt. Like to sell them, but we don't know their value. How do we find out how much they're worth? So we're going from rings to dolls. What do you think about that, Carol?
Well, it's inspection. You have to have someone come in and take a look at them. As Shirley and I were saying, you know, a lot of the value, especially in the bisque dolls, is in the head. So you really need to either take them somewhere and have someone look at them or call. Like, we do free consults and things like that, and I'm sure there's many people who do that will come and take a look and give them an idea of what their value is, depending upon what they want to do with them. You know, the best way to get fair market value for a lot of items is to sell them at auction, where you're selling them in a really well-marketed auction so that you're getting in touch with the collectors, and you're trying to reach those people who are going to appreciate those items as much as you did.
Okay. All right, let's go to Phyllis in Viroqua. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. I have kind of inherited a four-piece antique bedroom. Well, I don't know if it's considered antique, but it is over 100 years old. And it's made of oak veneer, and I just wondered, when did they start making furniture out of oak veneer?
Okay, and you think it's a 100-year-old bedroom set?
Yes, it has to be, according to, because it was my aunt's bedroom set, and according to her age and everything, I considered that it would be 100 years old, but I just can't imagine that they would make veneer furniture at that time.
Yeah. Well, what do you think, Carol?
Well, I know they did a lot with veneer in the 20s, but even earlier than that, for some of the exotic woods, like there was some that was rosewood veneer. There's a lot of like burl and crotch cuts that they did use a lot of veneering, you know, even late 1700s, early 1800s. So the fact that something is veneer doesn't necessarily mean it's much later, because they did do a lot of that in some very expensive and early pieces, but usually with more exotic and different cuts. But for oak, probably around the 20s, I would say.
The other thing you'll have to, do you know where this was made, where it came from?
No, I really don't. I know that the people that had it were married and before the turn of the century or about that time. So, yeah. But I don't realize if they'd bought, you know, inherited it from somebody or where they got it. But
there are some parts of the country where oak is less common than it is here in Wisconsin. So perhaps if it was made in one of those areas, that's why they might have veneered it at that time. That would have been more expensive.
This was from originally in Illinois.
Okay,
this is where they lived, and that's where they probably got it.
Yeah.
But I'm getting to the point where I have to downsize, and I'm just wondering if people really buy antique furniture right now. I just heard them say that furniture wasn't very much in demand right now.
It's just, people still are buying it. It's just that if people are looking at what the prices were 5 to 7 years ago and the prices for furniture now, there is a significant difference. It's not that nobody is buying it. It's just that we have to understand that the price and the pricing of it isn't quite as it used to be during the heyday.
So it's maybe 30% less?
Correct. I would say 30 to 35% less.
Mm-hmm. Now, stay with us here for a minute, Phyllis. You bring up another point that I think relates to a business that Shirley and Carol are getting into, this whole, you're talking about downsizing, and you guys are starting a new business, Shirley, then.
Yes, we are. And it's just based on the kind of call we're hearing right now. People are calling us and saying, I'm downsizing, I'm not going to be able to stay in my house for very long, and they need help. And so we're developing a senior relocation business, which is really an extension of what we do with estates already. But we can help the seniors do a number of things, and they get to choose by a menu of services. We could help find the new place they want to live in. We can help then decide what will fit in that new place. And what they want to take with them, maybe help them sort out what should go to family members and then what they might want to sell at auctions or estate sales as we do. We can help appraise those items before they move them so they're properly insured, get them shipped to family members with the proper insurance, help them settle into the new place. And we're getting senior relocation certifications. And we're not ready to take clients yet, but we're just in this stage of being able to take over and help these seniors and their families with the whole planning and management of that move, including the disposition of the property.
I'm living in an apartment now, so I have pretty well downsized to the necessities that I needed. And so I don't really have a large house full of things. But I just kind of... I know I'm going to have to dispose of this, and I just didn't know if I should just give it away or it would expect that even anybody would want anything like that, you know.
It's in good condition?
Yes, it's really in quite good condition. It's really, I've had people that admire it, but nobody seems to.
I certainly think it's something that you could sell. And if that becomes a problem for you, you could always donate it and take a tax deduction if that would fit your needs.
Yeah. So you have some options there, Phyllis. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate your call. Corinne in Richland Center, on to you now. Well, we'll get to you in just a minute, Corinne. I have to remind everybody that we're talking antiques, appraisals, and auctions with auctioneers Shirley Bauman of Madison, Carol Miller of Oconomowoc. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer.
Hi, this is Ben Marins, host of At Issue. Hoping you'll tune into the program later today, starting at 4. We'll begin the week with a top news story. After 5, we'll continue our candidate series, talking to candidates for Wisconsin's 4th Congressional District. It's all At Issue later this afternoon, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Portabella Italian Restaurant, now featuring off-site catering for business lunches and office parties. Catering information and a complete list of menu options available at portabellarestaurant.biz.
And we'll take some more calls as we deal with antiques and appraisals and auctions with our two guests, Shirley Bauman and Carol Miller. And Corinne in Richland Center, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Yes, fine. Books I know are plentiful, and so are maps. But being a cartologist, which I am myself, I last week bought a map in Richland Center. It's a bird's eye view of Richland Center. Now, the man that drew this one was Herman Brosius. Brosius. He and his twin brother were born in Milwaukee in 1851. And my question is, I would like to know more about this man, if you know anything about maps. And evidently, if this was done anywhere from 1870s, whatever, the town wasn't very big. But I'm very interested in men who, or anyone who does these. They seem to do bird's eye view of everything. If you get in your computer, there's a lot of pictures in it he has done.
Mm-hmm. Brosius is a B-R-O-S-I-U-S.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unfortunately, I don't know anything about that person. Do you, Carol?
I don't. I mean, we'd have to do some research. I mean, it certainly can be done, but I don't off the top of my head. But I have sold a lot of bird's eye views of Waukesha County towns in the past, and bird's eye view of actually Waukesha and so forth. So we have sold them, but I don't recall if that was the person that had done it. I'm not familiar with that name.
Okay.
There is quite an interest in maps right now. So you probably do have something worth keeping a hold of. And recently, Carol and I were working on an auction together. We sold an 1838 Wisconsin Territory map, which folded up together into a nice little cardboard cover that could fit in a pocket. It was something that went for, what, $1,700?
Mm-hmm.
So there's some potential there, mm-hmm. but we can't help you out with the map maker.
All right.
All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Janet in La Crosse emailed, would you talk about quadruple plate items? I inherited a silver, in quotes, jewelry box from my great-great-grandmother. The mark indicates it's quadruple plate, made in Kentucky. It's very ornate in the shape of a chariot. I think it was made in the late 1800s. I'd like to know more about it. It's Janet in La Crosse.
Well, quadruple plate means it was electroplated with four layers of silver plating on it. And that period sounds just about right for when we see that quad plate or quadruple plate on the markings on those sorts of things. Again, it's a base white base metal with that silver plated on it. What you need to be careful about is polishing. I've seen so many things that are plated from that period, and people polished and polished over so many years and really did it such a good job that they took the layers of silver right off of it. So be a little careful as you polish it, but that's what you have.
All right. And another email from Ray in Hartford, Wisconsin, has an antique Wilcox American Rose tea set, including a coffee pot, number 7302, and a sugar bowl, 7303, creamer, 7304, and a 15-by-26 inch serving, ornate serving tray with no number visible. Any collectible value to these items, or would they be more valuable as to a jeweler as a meltdown? Carol, you want to?
What happens is those are going to be silver plate again. So as far as a meltdown to a jeweler, no. They're looking for meltdowns, you're looking for sterling. And if it is sterling, it will say sterling, or it will have certain hallmarks on it that are going to identify it as sterling, or could say 925, which is a grade of sterling. A lot of the appeal for silver plate, because it isn't solid sterling, has to do with its visual appeal, you know, and how pleasing it is to the eye. So the value would definitely be in the intrinsic value of it, not in the silver value.
All right.
And I could add one thing on here. This is another one of these things that is going lower in value these days, and it's really because of our lifestyle. People are so busy, they don't take the time or want to take the time to be polishing silver and silver plate that much. So
there you have it.
Things change.
Lance said, I heard one of the guests mention selling of advertising. I have a collection of magazines from the 30s through the 50s, House and Garden, Holiday, Life. These have lots of beautiful color ads and other illustrations. How do I go about marketing them or the whole magazines?
Well, that's the choice one has to make. Selling magazines like that, the ones named from that period, usually go only $3 to $5 a piece, maybe a little bit more, if they're in very good to excellent condition. Now, something that a lot of people do especially if the covers are torn or not in excellent condition, is take them apart and sell the advertisement separately. Say, put it with a cardboard backing in a sleeve and sell them separately. And you see a lot of those on eBay and other auction sites, and they can bring from $3 to $5 to $7 a piece for the ad. So that's one way to go.
A lot of the Coca-Cola ads, you know, were popular that were in a lot of those magazines. Mm-hmm. Some of the firearms ads are really popular if you get a good Winchester ad in some of those magazines. Since Winchester is, you know, no longer mm-hmm. in business, a lot of those, there's really good collectors when you have a cross collectible, you know, where you can get the advertisers, you can get the gun collectors or the Coke collectors or, you know, soft drink collectors. When you get a number of different people that are interested, it obviously drives the value for you.
Justin in Madison, we turn to you now. Hi, Justin.
Hey there. I have our family's Victrola and also an Edison role player with, you know, a ton of 78s and then the ceramic roles that they play on. You know, I don't see them a lot on, like, the Antiques Roadshow very much. I wonder if that's because they're, you know, rare that they're still around or if it's because they're very common that they're still around. And then also on the Victrola, the Turner plays, but it's a little bit, you know, wobbly. So I was wondering if maybe you could recommend somebody that might be able to fine-tune that for me.
Well, it's interesting that you come up with this. I have just been taped for an episode of American Pickers for the History Channel, and what they brought to me was a floor-standing phonograph. So I do know something about that. And the first question I have for you is it really a Victrola? Only those made by Victor are Victrolas.
It is. I mean, it's got the. It's an RCA. You know, it's. Okay. You know, it's got the Edison patent on the back. The tall standing one. You know, maybe 4 feet high or something. Mm-hmm. And then the other, the Edison player is truly an Edison player. Yes. It says the role player. It says, you know, it's got Edison right on the front of it.
Yeah, we're just saying that because. You know, some people call every phonograph a Victrola. So what's going on with it? The question you ask, there are quite a few of them around, and they are not very valuable particularly or hard to come by, especially those floor-standing models. And what's happening there is probably your spring is giving out. That's why it plays a little bit. And so it needs to maybe have a new mainspring and be reconditioned to continue playing. Value on a floor-standing Victrola, we often see them in the range of around $200, maybe if you have a great one, $250. Now, what the collectors are really after are the older ones, and your Edison might be one. Does that have a external horn?
It does. It doesn't. It can play if you don't have the horn on it,
right.
And you can hear it. But when you put the horn on it, the weight of the horn kind of presses too hard against the ceramic roll, and it doesn't play very well.
It's missing something then. What it needs is just what would you call it, a crane almost that holds it up, a bar.
Like a brace. Is it a tulip-shaped horn or just a smooth-sided horn?
Smooth-sided, I guess.
Okay.
But it's got, you know, the piece that has the needle and then the bar that holds the horn. And, you know, like I say, the horn removes, and I don't know if it's even the original horn on it.
Right.
But, you know, the weight of the horn kind of, and it's, you know, you can adjust that even with the horn on it, and you can kind of hold it with the horn and play it.
Mm-hmm.
But just to let it play all the way through, it works best just without the horn and to be really quiet to listen to it.
So that might mean that it's a replacement horn because the horn should not be interfering with the playing of it. And I'm thinking what this one is it plays cylinder records.
Yep, correct.
And
they're like tube.
It's a tube. And
ceramic tubes, yeah.
And the it's really interesting. If people haven't seen that, look it up. And the records are actually cylinders, and the cylinder turns. And these Edisons are, you know, people collect them. They're very collectible. Probably has an oak case and maybe a hump back top on it, arched. And we see them going at auction a lot of times around $700, maybe a little more or something. And sometimes the real special ones can go quite a bit higher.
All right. And then, you know, I've got a ton of the 78s and a ton of the tubes themselves. I would imagine those have somewhat you know, value as, on an individual basis? Or is it,
well, they do have a little bit of value, but they can only be played by people who happen to have those machines.
Yeah.
So the cylinders, especially, I would sell those with the Edison machine and, you know, add a little bit of cost for the records because there's not that many people that have those machines. A few more people, of course, have the machines that'll play the 78s. But there's still only a few dollars a piece, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of it depends upon who is the musician that has done the pieces.
Yep. There you go. Thanks, Justin. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Denny in Middleton, we turn to you. Hi, Denny.
Oh, good morning. I have it's an antique umbrella stand that's been oil painted on the sides. It's kind of a sculpture in its own. But then someone painted it, and I know it's from upstate New York, but there's no markings on it, and it's really, really old. So how would I find out more about it with no markings on it?
Carol?
Definitely need to have a photo of it. You know, a photo of the sides and then also maybe a photo of the bottom and the interior. Is it a wood base?
No, it's ceramic, and, you know, I've looked on umbrella stand on eBay, and there's so many different kinds that are made. Mine's been a fishing pole holder for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Is it a scene on the side? Is that scene that you're talking about that is painted, is it raised?
There's no seam. It's the whole thing is made out of some kind of ceramic. It's got an amazing glaze on it.
No, she was talking about scene, a drawn...
Like a pictorial, what?
Oh, it's flowers. It's okay. Oh, a scene. It's just yellow flowers like daffodils.
Okay, so it's smooth.
Yeah, yes. Except the daffodils are raised like you know, an oil painting would be.
Okay, is it shiny?
Yeah, but the glaze is old and kind of checked. You know, it's like an old guitar gets cracked in and, yeah. You know.
If you look when you're doing your searches on the internet, look like under Weller Luelsa or Roseville
Art Pottery Umbrella Stand.
Yep.
You might find there's some sites that are just art pottery. Actually, I think that's what one of them is called, justartpottery.com. And look for umbrella stands, and you might see something
because
like that.
Because Weller and Roseville both did a real, you know, a version that might fit into what you have.
Roseville. Roseville. Okay, thank you so much.
And Weller.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Thanks a lot for calling. Phil in Cottage Grove, your turn. Hi, Phil.
Hi there. I run across some stuff from the 1933 World's Fair in Chicago. It's a dustpan, and there's another little thing like a broom, but it's not a broom, for cleaning it. I've been told that it's for cleaning out breadcrumbs off of tables in a fancier restaurant.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you have, and they call it a crummer.
Okay.
And you brush the crumbs off the white linen tablecloth into the little pan there. And the fact that it's got the World's Fair on makes it appealing to World's Fair collectors. Crummers on their own aren't very collectible anymore these days, but World's Fair collectors, what is it made out of? Is it a light metal?
It looks like silver, but it's almost like I could crumble it in my hand. Almost like lead, but
maybe a tin or
stronger than lead.
A sheet metal kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of almost like a pre-aluminum.
It's got some weight to it. It's fairly heavy.
Yeah.
With the, if the World's Fair... whatever insignia, embossing, label is real clear, then you're probably talking something in maybe the $20-$25 range.
Okay. Well, it's on both of them, and it has all of the World's Fair buildings and the dates and everything on it. I don't think it's ever been used, and I have no idea where it came from. I just found it in a box.
Yeah.
Interesting. Thanks for calling. And Myrtle in Madison, hello to you.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 1985 Cabbage Patch doll. It's the name of the doll is Sherwood Zeke, Z-E-K-E. And I was wondering, it's never been, this is the second, I just took it out of the box. It's the second time it's been out of the box. And I'm wondering if it's worth any money.
I would say that is a little bit more contemporary than a lot of the dolls that we sell on a regular basis. If you do have access to the internet, you could do a quick search on eBay under that 1985 Cabbage Patch to kind of see what they're going for. I know the real early Cabbage Patches, there was a time when those were fairly collectible. I don't know of a lot of people who are collecting Cabbage Patch dolls at this time.
No. So there you go. Thanks, Myrtle. Susan in Madison, on to you. Hi, Susan.
Hi, good morning. I need to be closing out my mother's estate in another state.
Yeah.
She was 98 years old, and she had many antiques and some other things, not antiques. And I'm just looking for guidance about how to find a reputable person to help me.
What is the other state?
New York,
okay.
New York City.
One of the things you can do is look for an appraiser in that area through the websites of one of the three appraisal associations, the International Society of Appraisers, which is the one I belong to, the American Society of Appraisers, or the Appraisal Association of America, if you need an appraiser. If you are looking for an auctioneer, go to the State of New York's website for the Auctioneers Association of New York and try and find a member of that association, because those members need to work by a code of ethics, right. And you would have you could call the association office, or maybe they have something on their website where you could email in and ask about that.
Great.
Otherwise, too, you can go to the National Auctioneers Association, NAA. It's NAA.org, I believe, nationalauctioneers.org, and then I believe you can get to the different state sites from there as well.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And before we get away here, this new business that you guys are starting up, you two, is when's that going to get going?
Well, we're just in the beginning phases right now. We would encourage people to watch our websites to keep up with the progress of it. We need to do a little bit more on our own to get all our T's crossed and I's dotted before we can start taking customers.
And again, your website, Shirley, let's go. You have a couple of websites.
Yes. Bauman, and that's Bauman, BaumanAuctions.com, and HeirloomAppraisal.com.
Okay. And Carol?
Baileyshonor.com, which is BaileyshonorR.com. I also guess I would encourage, being the state representative, that people go to the Wisconsin Auctioneers Association website and find all the auctions around Wisconsin and really, look into how auctions can be a better, can serve you and your needs, and go there to look at all the auctions in Wisconsin and know that auctions are a great great way to go green. And
I'm just, absolutely,
again, excited to be able to be an ambassador for the Wisconsin Auctioneers Association for this year.
And I appreciate you guys being with us. I hope you'll come back and do it again.
You bet.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Thank you very much for being with us. Shirley Bauman, auctioneer and certified appraiser, works out of Madison. And again, her her websites are Bauman Auctions. That's all one word, BaumanAuctions.com. And the other is HeirloomAppraisal.com. Excuse me. And then Carol Miller of Bailey's Honor Auction Service. And Carol, give me that website again.
Baileyshonor.com, BaileyshonorR.com.
All right. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll have them back and we'll do this again. I'm pretty sure of that. And I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody. And that's how it always works, unfortunately. But we're switching topics now, and we're going to be talking about achieving your maximum level of physical fitness. Dustin Maher, our guest, coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.